ॐ भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So today we're reading from Canto 7, Chapter 14, Text 8. Title, Ideal Family Life. Yavad Brieta Jataram Tavat Svatvam Hidehinam. Adikam Yo Vimanyaita Sasteno dandamarhati Yavad Brieta Jataram Jatarnam Tavat Svatvam Hidehinam Adihikam Yo Vimanyeta Sasteno dandamarhati Yavad Brieta Jataram Tavat Svatvam Hidehinam Adikam Yo Bimanyeta Sasteno Dandamarhati Adikam Yo Vimanyaita Sasteno Dandamarhati. Ladies? Eta Aryatam Tavat Svatvam Hidehinam Adikam Yo Vimanyaita Sasteno dandamahati. Yavat, as much as, Brieta, may be filled. Jataram, the stomach. Tavat, that much. Svatvam, proprietorship. He, indeed, Dehinam, of the living entities. Adikam, more than that. Ya, anyone who. Abhimanyeta, may accept. Saha, he. Stena, a thief. Dandam, punishment. Arhati deserves. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. One may claim proprietorship to as much wealth as required to maintain body and soul together, but one who desires proprietorship over more than that must be considered a thief, and he deserves to be punished by the laws of nature. Purport. By God's favor, we sometimes get large quantities of food grains or suddenly receive some contribution or unexpected profit in business. In this way, we may get more money than needed. So how should that be spent? There is no need to accumulate money in the bank merely to increase one's bank balance. Such a mentality is described in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 16, verse 13, as asuric, demoniac. Idam madaya maya labdam imam prapsye manoratam. Idam astidam apime bhavisyati punardhanam. The demoniac person thinks, so much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now, and it will increase in the future more and more. The asura is considered with how much wealth he has in the bank today and how it will increase tomorrow. But unrestricted accumulation of wealth is not permitted, either by the Shastra or, in the modern age, by the government. Actually, if one has more than one requires for his necessities, the extra money should be spent for Krishna. According to the Vedic civilization, it should all be given to Krishna, to the Krishna consciousness movement, as ordered by the Lord himself in Bhagavad Gita 9:27, yat karosi yad ashnasi yaj jahoshi dadasi yat yat tapasyasi kunteya tat kurusva mad arpanam. O son of Kunti, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, as well as all austerities that you may perform, should be done as an offering unto me. Grahasthas should spend extra money only for the Krishna consciousness movement. The grahasthas should give contribution for constructing temples of the Supreme Lord and for preaching of Srimad Bhagavad Gita or Krishna consciousness all over the world. Srinvan Bhagavato Mikshanam Avatara Katamritam. In the Shastras, the Puranas, and other Vedic literatures, there are so many narrations describing the transcendental activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And everyone should hear them again and again. For example, even if we read the entire Bhagavad Gita every day, all 18 chapters, in each reading we shall find a new explanation. That is the nature of transcendental literature. The Krishna consciousness movement therefore affords one an opportunity to spend his extra earnings for the benefit of all human society by expanding Krishna consciousness. In India especially, we see hundreds and thousands of temples that were constructed by the wealthy men of society who did not want to be called thieves and be punished. This verse is very important. As stated here, one who accumulates more money than needed is a thief, and by the laws of nature, he will be punished. One who acquires more money than necessary becomes desirous of enjoying material comforts more and more. Materialists are inventing so many artificial necessities, and those who have money, being allured by such artificial necessities, try to accumulate money to possess more and more. This is the idea of modern economic development. Everyone is engaged in earning money, and that money is kept in the bank, which then offers money to the public. In this cycle of activities, everyone is engaged in getting more and more money, and therefore the ideal goal of human life is being lost. Concisely, it may be said that everyone is a thief and is liable to be punished. Punishment by the laws of nature takes place in the cycle of birth and death. No one dies fully satisfied by the fulfillment of material desires, for that is not possible. Therefore, at the time of one's death, one is very sorry being unable to fulfill his desires. By the laws of nature, one is then offered another body to fulfill his unsatisfied desires, and upon taking birth again, accepting another material body, one voluntarily accepts the threefold miseries of life. Hare Krishna. Uma ginata madandasya jananjana savakaya chaksulan militam jena tasmai sri gurave namaha panchakopa tirubhishcha kripa sindubhya eva cha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha jai shri krishna chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhar, Sri Vasudhi Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, this chapter is very nice, these verses. Of course, the chapter title, Ideal Family Life. So, some of you were thinking, of all people to be up here, Shruti Kirti, talking about ideal family life. Of course, I can tell you all many things not to do, how to attain ideal family life. But especially towards the end here, it speaks about one dying. And as we know, and Prabhupada always told us, the whole purpose of everything we do in Krishna consciousness is to prepare for that one single moment, the time of death. And if at the time of death we have our attachments and our aversions, it's those very attachments that bring us into the next body. This is the karma, when we have love for someone, we have anger, we have hate, we have debt. I remember Srila Prabhupada, when there was one of the little bands, this was in Calcutta, and they were playing, they were doing Harinam out in front of the temple. And this was their business, they were chanting. And of course, we as devotees, we would see them and just stand by and watch. And at the end, Prabhupada said, give them something, give them a donation. So we were a little surprised because, we have that mentality. We're engaged in devotional service full time. What are we giving donations to others? And Prabhupada said, you were taking from them, you're hearing, you're enjoying the kirtan, the music, whatever it is. So you have to give something in return. If you don't give something in return, you have to come back. So this is everything in the material world. We want to clear our debts. So I bring this up because I have some experience in seeing how the spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada and Krishna, helps a sincere devotee as they approach this time of death to become detached. Not such an easy thing, especially in this ashram, this family life. That's why we're speaking about the ideal. It's something that we want to attain to. So speaking about my own situation, some 10 years ago, myself and Amekala Devi, some of you might know her, she was from England, so she spent most of her time there, joined 1971. She was just a child of 17. But we got together and got married just 10 years ago. And, of course, both of us had been divorced, so certainly not an ideal situation. But somehow or other, after getting together, we were able to increase our service. I completed my book, which had been in process for some 7 years. And once that was done, she assisted me very nicely, and we were traveling all over Europe, Eastern Europe, Russia, Ukraine, festivals. Probably went to about 10 festivals over the next 6 or 7 years, and many temples in Europe and everywhere. And one of these festivals, it was the Baltic Sea Festival. So that was 2008. And we would go there for a week, and I would do seminars, Srila Prabhupada seminar, Prabhupada Katha. So one morning we went after the program, we were at breakfast, and one Mataji there, Devaki Mataji, she's around there in Europe doing a lot of service. So the three of us were standing talking, and Amekala, my wife, said, I had a dream of Prabhupada last night. And she said, 30 years I've never had a dream of Srila Prabhupada. And we said, so what happened? She said, it was very strange. She said, he said to me, There's not much time left. Accept all invitations to travel and preach. And we were already doing this, but it reinforced the understanding when one is given an opportunity to speak, given an opportunity to do service, you have to accept it. So she said, you know, what does it mean? So she was an Irish lass. Huh? So if you know anything about Irish, they're very much in the kind of conspiracies. They like conspiracy theories and things. So she was saying, well, maybe the economic collapse is going to happen soon, so we won't have the ability to travel, planes will be down, or, you know, there'll be another war. So we're thinking in this way. And then she said, or maybe I'll be gone. And we just looked at each other and smiled. And she was 55 years old, you know, and strong, always doing service. Her favorite service was the children, keeping the children in our movement safe, and the ladies. These were her two priorities in devotional service. So we didn't give it much thought after that. And it was just about 6 months later, she had what was diagnosed as a torn ligament, very bad one, and was forced to stay in bed. So at that time, we were back in England. I continued to travel a little and have to take care of her as it got worse and worse. And there was no investigation done except that she had a torn ligament. Couldn't even get out of bed. So I was cooking, cleaning, laundry, doing everything. And by the time 4 months went by, I was feeling a little frustrated and thinking, oh, I'm doing this, you know, just taking care of my wife and my service is preaching. I thought I was a preacher. And one day I was making lunch for us, for her, and something happened in my head and it just clicked. And I thought, she is my service. Somehow or other, Krishna's given me this service. She's Prabhupada's daughter, Prabhupada's disciple. And this is actually very good service at this time. She had taken such wonderful care of me for 7 years. So that happened, and she just got worse and worse. And we'd go to the doctors and give her medication, and she went to some Ayurvedic doctor, and he was sticking pins in her and saying, if you don't stay in bed, you're going to be crippled. And got to the point where I was had to carry her in the bathroom doing so many things. So it went all the way to Christmas Day, 2009. So now this has been going on for 8 months, and her health is deteriorating. So finally had to take her to the hospital. Her pain was so bad. As it turned out, it took them 2 weeks to figure out, because it was holiday season and everything, that she had stage 4 lymphatic cancer that started in her hip area. So then they became very eager, you know, to put her through the routine. And although we had always said we would never wanted to do the hospital thing, would never do all these things, she said, all right, we'll try. So she did one chemotherapy treatment. It was around January 15th. And, of course, her condition was already very weak. She was in stage 4 cancer. So she became more weak. I was even lifting her head up just so she could vomit what was going on. So within 2 weeks, she had developed septicemia, very severe blood infection, because she had no immune system. So now we were home, and it got very bad, and she was not a very good patient. She never took any of the medications she gave, you know, they gave her or anything like that. She was just going to conquer this herself, you know. But it wasn't working. And so the one day she said, call the devotees, bring them in for kirtan to the house. So we did that, and we live just a few blocks from the manor, Bhaktivedanta Manor. So within hours, it's like 5, 6 in the evening, there's like over 100 devotees in our house, and in the kitchen is the kirtan. They're doing bhajan, and devotees are all over chanting. And there's a few of us in the room. People are coming in, and everyone was thinking she was going to die at that time, as she did. And she wanted to. She was ready. So then I was sitting at the bed with her, and I kind of just stopped everything for a while because of the drain on her. And I was just sitting at the head of the bed, and I would rub her bald head. We shaved her head just a week or so before. She cried when she shaved her head, and then after a while she looked and she said, "It looks very good." You know. So she had this shaved head. She had a fever of about 106 at the time. Her eyes were glowing, and this big smile on her face, completely dehydrated and in total ecstasy. So I'm sitting with her, and she just fell out of consciousness, external consciousness. And she started laughing in that state. And then she opened her eyes. And I said, "What happened? You were laughing." She said, "I just saw Prabhupada." She said, "He was standing before me." She said, "Very beautiful, beautiful garlands. And he smiled at me, big smile." And she said, "I could feel." She said, "I love you." She said, "It was wonderful." She said, "I always thought he was disgusted with me." She was so sweet. And then she fell out again. And she came, and the same thing. She just had smiles on her face, you know, and she was giggling. And then she opened her eyes. And I said, "You know, what happened?" She said, "Oh, I don't know." She said, "I was in a beautiful place." She said, "It seemed like maybe Mayapur." She said, "And I saw two young boys. She said, "I don't know who they were." She said, "They were beautiful." She said, "Maybe Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, I don't know." She said, "And they were laughing. And they looked at me and said, 'It's not your time yet.'" She said, "And they ran away." So now I'm writing things down. I thought, this is special. So then it happened the third time. She woke up. I said, "All right, what happened?" She said, "I saw a blue boy." She said, "And he said the same thing." She said, "So beautiful." She said, "Beautiful forest." She said, "And he just said, 'It's not time. We'll come back.'" So through that evening, sons were there. So many were there. A doctor came, a house visit. Imagine a house visit. This was in the UK. All free. They'd give you all those chemicals for free. Free for nothing. And he said, "Your problem is not the cancer, it's a septicemia. So all we have to do is bring you to the hospital, fill you up with a lot of antibiotics, the kind they give you for very serious things, the things they put in the mail, whatever that's called, that poison." And she didn't, you know, she's looking at me and she's saying, "I don't want to go to the hospital." And after taking care of her for the last several months and seeing her condition, I just said, "Okay, whatever you want." But others who were there, there were a lot of different idea. So anyway, ambulance came. They took her to the hospital. She was unconscious externally. And they put the antibiotics in, licked different liquids in, and about 8 o'clock in the morning, she opened her eyes. Up until that point, she had a fever somehow or other. It was 42.2 Celsius, which translates to 108 degrees, which means she should have been dead. But somehow or other, she came out of it. She opened her eyes and was surrounded by her family members. And she looked, and the first thing, just everything had changed. And she said, I have relevance. It was the funniest thing coming out of her mouth. She said, I have relevance. She said, I deserve. She said, because Krishna loves me. And then she said, if Krishna didn't love us, why would he give us so much help to bring us back home, back to Godhead? She had actually come to the point of understanding Prabhupada and Krishna loved her. It's a difficult concept for some of us. For her it was. She had a difficult life. And then she said, you know, it's all about control. She said, Krishna's in control. She said, we're not the controllers. Now, she had 5 grown-up children. And she was, anyone that knows her greatest quality was her motherhood. She was a wonderful mother. And even though they were grown up, she was still trying to tell them what to do, what they should do. She always gave them Krishna consciousness in their life, never cared about their careers or anything, just wanted to show them devotees and chanting and the deities. And she said, Krishna's in control. We're not the controllers. And then she laughed. She said, but I'm a little stubborn. Now imagine, she had just escaped death for the moment, had nothing left in her body. And then she looked at us and she said, don't feel sorry for me. Because, of course, we're all looking at her, this dying woman, and we're all attached to. And she said, don't feel sorry for me. She said, I feel sorry for you. She said, you're all going to have to go through this. She said, I'm done. She said, but you have to go through this. So she was completely out of her body for days. I mean, she was just, I had been with her for years. And although I knew her, we were like male and female of each other. We were very much the same. And it was very nice after a lifetime of different things. But to be with her, we just helped each other in our service. She was more fanatic about Srila Prabhupada than I was. I thought I was kind of fanatic. Some people would say, you know, I'm fanatic. I'm just Prabhupada's books and Prabhupada and nothing else. But she was even more so. So it was very wonderful. We were on the same page in everything. And we went back home, and she lived for 3 more months of total agony. And all she wanted was me to take care of her. Nobody else. She was very private. Even in the hospital, sometimes we were in and out of the hospital, and I would sleep in the hospital on the floor next to her. I would change the sheets. I would change her. They would come in and say, should we, you know, give you a shower, change? No, my husband does it, she said, and he's better than all of you. And I'd be, oh, God, you know, don't say that to the staff, you know. But it was true, you know, because they were overworked and underpaid, and I was doing it out of love. And so that went on for 3 months. Physically, it was the most difficult thing. And I felt that Prabhupada gave me that opportunity. You know, I always felt cheated. I cheated myself that I wasn't there for Prabhupada's final months. I was there for a few weeks in September with Upendra helping him. Then I went back. I was temple president in Hawaii, you know. And that didn't matter, but I thought that was something. So I went back there. So I always regretted not having that opportunity. So then my realization was, he's given me this opportunity. I got to take care of his very dear disciple, his daughter. And over those 3 months, Krishna and Prabhupada, they showed her how to become detached from everything. Myself, we went from this couple who were very attached to each other to I literally just felt like I was her servant. I wasn't her husband anymore. Talk about ideal family life. It was ideal situation. I learned how to serve her, take care of her, who Prabhupada had taken care of for so many years. So I got to do that for her. And various things happened. As I said, when we first got back from the hospital, anyone, again, if you know her, she was from Manchester. She was born and raised in Manchester, England, like a few blocks from the stadium. Man U. Man U, actually, I used to tell her it's okay, because she would never miss a game. You know, we got a TV that big so she could watch Man U. And I said, well, it's Manu. I said, it's a Sanskrit word. I said, there must be okay. So she got back, and the next night, her youngest son came in. Man U's on. You want to watch them? No. She's just different. You know, she had changed. She was getting ready. And over the weeks, she got more and more ready to leave this world. Her children, she's so attached to helping, making sure everything was okay. Even though they were grown up, you know, you grow up, everyone does what they want. I would say to her, they're not 15 anymore, you know. She would say, he was chanting 16 rounds. And I'd say, yeah, but now it's he's older. So gradually she got to see that I have no control. She said over and over that one day, Krishna's the controller. I'm not the controller. And she got to see it. But it was given to her by Prabhupada. It was given to her by Krishna. He did it because she was a sincere devotee. We got together 7 years before. Everyone thought, there it is. There's Sruta, Mekla, Maya, divorce, remarry. And at the end, she was in the hospice for her last week. So many things I could tell you that were just amazing, but there's not enough time. How I saw Krishna making all the arrangements, and Srila Prabhupada was there making all the arrangements for her. I used to have to in bed because her bone was deteriorating here. The pain, I can't even imagine. She never complained. When I used to lift her up, I would bathe her in the tub and lift her up out. And sometimes she'd sit in the tub and had little, what do you call, like the lifesaver, air things under her. So it wasn't hard where she was sitting. And she'd sit there and say, I must have done some terrible thing, she said. And that would be her understanding, which, of course, that's Vaishnava. I've done so many sinful activities, I'm getting this token reaction. Instead of one approaches his suffering in that way, the spiritual world is his home, and will welcome him. So she was like that. She never complained. I said, you never complained. She said, really? But she didn't. I would just rub her back, rub her side, and she would just sigh. So then we were there, got there Saturday. Sunday, externally, she just wasn't there. So then it went all the way to Wednesday, and I was sitting by the bed. She opened her eyes. And her leg had gone down, which meant put a lot of pressure. And she just looked at me and she said, fix my leg. Somehow it just came out of her mouth, you know. And I just said, all right. I said, let me get some help, because I was afraid to move her. And I said that. And then she said with this very commanding voice, like he'd come from somewhere else, because she had no strength. She was almost dead in her body. And she said, you know what to do. And I just, and like it was this very strong voice. So I did it. You know, I put her leg up. She had this very interesting form lying in the bed. I put her leg up in. And I did know what to do. And they were her last words to me. You know what to do. Prabhupada's first words to me as a servant was, follow me. as I followed him as he carried his loader. And I thought those two words, that's all I had to know from Prabhupada, was follow him. What else do we need to do, right? Follow him. So her words to me was, you know what to do. And when she said it, it sounded just like Prabhupada talking to me. And I thought, phew. And then after that, she was around for a few more days. We knew she had 48 hours or so left. Hundreds of devotees came in the last evening, the next morning. Radhanath Maharaj flew in from, he was in India. All the flights were canceled. Because of, it's when the volcano happened in Greenland or Iceland or something. All the airports were closed all over Europe. And in England, everything was closed. And I was in contact with him. And somehow or other, he got a private flight with one of his disciples, businessmen, detoured to Africa, and from Africa went into London and landed. And he was there the evening when she departed. Well, it wasn't the evening, but he was there the evening before he came in. Hundreds of devotees were there, all going in and out, paying their respects. And she left the next morning. I took rest that night. It was very difficult for me, on call all the time. So I went to bed. It was around 11 at night. Devotee said to me, aren't you afraid she might die? You know, while you're sleeping? I said, no. I said, she's not going to go tonight. I said, I'll be back in the morning. I got a knock on the door. 5:30 in the morning, I was just right next door in this little room, closet. Said, her heartbeat's increased. So I ran in. And she left. It was about 5:55 in the morning. Later on, Petit Pavana, our godbrother astrologer, Petit Duran, he did her chart. And, of course, it was the month of Purushottama. It was a month of most auspicious month in the course of 3 years in our calendar. Anything that happens you do in that month is wonderful. So she left in the month of Purushottama. She left at 5:55 in the morning, which was right at this special juncture between Mangala hours and sunrise. He said so many things. He said, but ultimately he said, Bhishma Dev, he performed his austerities. He laid on a bed of arrows and performed the to leave at this particular time, right at this juncture. And when I thought about that, and I thought, she laid on a bed of arrows for 6 months, but the last 3 months, just torture. So somehow or other, Krishna took her at that time. Prabhupada took her at that time. And I got a lot of stories from different people who saw her as she left, saw her all around the world. She had many friends all around the world, admirers. So, and so many other things happened, but we'll stop here. But the point is, you can't judge a book by its cover. Radhanath Maharaj said, if you would have seen her externally, many people had different impressions. Of course, so many people, she won their hearts. She was just the most giving, compassionate person I knew. And, in the course of 7 years, what started out one way, now to this day, Radhanath Maharaj and the Ukraine Festival, this is 3 years later, he was still giving a class about her. So we started out as being this kind of odd couple, in some ways outcast in different places, other places welcome very much. And she became a hero. So the opportunity is there for everyone. And we have to be very careful how we see one another, how we judge one another, what we think about each other. Because you just never know. I know where she is. I have no doubts. So I'll stop here. Any questions and comments? Anything? But this is the process. We have to learn to detach. But we don't do it on our own. It's through the mercy of the spiritual master that it all happens. Yes. I have. I have it in England. To this point, I've been able to get some here. The book is called Amekla Devi, I Am Relevant. And it's a really amazing book, because it's about her. And Sangeeta, I don't know if you know Sangeeta Devi, she's the, our god sister who developed the hospice in ISKCON and the website many years ago. And she's written two books, The Final Journey, and she has a sequel now about it. And she thinks it should be, every grahasta at least should read this book, she feels, to understand what our business is, what our service is. And I also have it as an e-book. If anyone wants it, you can reach me on Facebook, and I'll be happy to let you have it. But I do have some hard copies as well, and I'm working on getting them to England and over here, just a few. In Europe, it's sold, some people who are more familiar with her and us, and the book came out. So by word of mouth, it's kind of been passed around. And especially people in my generation, will write me and say, I'm taking care of my husband, or I'm taking care of my wife, and your book has just been so wonderful to have. And so, yeah, there is. I actually, after she left, I left England a week later. I couldn't wait to get out of there. If you read the book, you'll understand all the different circumstances. But it was just very painful. And I wound up with friends in the Caribbean. And after a few days, I started writing. And it's just a small book, but in 3 weeks I was finished. I just poured everything out at that time. And I finished it, and we offered it to Amekla on her anniversary the next year at Bhaktivedanta Manor. So, yeah, thank you. Yes.
Thank you very much for sharing that story, and it's very nourishing, because all our careers as devotees is going to be test at the time of death. So I've been hearing also many stories of other Prabhupada disciples, how they left, and the same note, the end of Prabhupada came,
yes.
Krishna came, devotees were there.
Yes.
So that assures us as devotees, as practitioners, to increase our faith. I also went through the same thing as you were relating the story. I had my father who went through some struggles of cancer, and he was prepared for the last 3 months. And amazing stories like you just relate about her, their vision. It's incredible, because you cannot... you think, is it real? It's like, yeah, it has to be real.
Yeah, and I'm the biggest skeptic
ever.
I don't believe anything. And, I saw it. I lived it. My mother, 90 years old, she just passed away recently. She was a very first-class Catholic woman. My father died. I was 3. For 60 years... is all she did was raise children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, never another man in her life, totally chaste woman. Again, and I'm her son, so she would shake her head about me as well. But I was in the Ukraine preaching. They had me come there for John Mastami Vyas Pooj. I knew she was ill, and I thought she'd be around. She left John Mastami morning, right after midnight. Krishna appeared, she left 2 minutes later. So even she was blessed by Srila Prabhupada, And yes, it's we have to have faith. And, it, for me, is what I see and what Amekla had. As I said, she was so compassionate. And she wasn't a softy, She was Irish descent. I mean, she would come down. If she saw women being abused in our society, the children being abused, she'd cut you down right in front of you. She didn't care who was there, who you were, what color your cloth was. She didn't, there was no question. So she had such love for the devotees and such chastity to Srila Prabhupada. And whatever else was there, it just didn't matter. It's what's important. You know, she held on to what was important. And she was just a wonderful wife, wonderful person. Yeah. So that's the other side of the coin, huh? With family life. You know, you think if your family life isn't so nice, you're thinking you're suffering. And of course we are, we're suffering, you know, we have the difficulties and the fights and so many things. But then we had the opposite. We just had this really wonderful family life and preaching, going around preaching about Prabhupada. We were so happy. And then she got taken. So then you suffer that way. So suffering's there either way. If you're happy when it's taken away, you suffer. And if you're not happy, well, then you're already suffering. So either way, you know, if you think, well, hey, I have it great, I'm not suffering. Well, just wait until that great thing you have gets taken away, because that's what happens in this world. We all get taken away. One of the things, I got a letter immediately, almost hours later, and one devotee lady, a very special devotee, she, Mekhala appeared to her. She didn't even know she had gone, nothing, but somehow or other she appeared to her. And she said to this woman, she said, tell Shruti Kirti to stop crying. She said, this is what we wanted. She said, we would talk about this, you know, that we had this nice life, and when we go, everything, we would feel complete and content and satisfied. She said, so tell him to stop crying. Tell him I'm happy. Everything is fine. So I went back to the hospital the very first time after the hospice, after she died. And I opened up my email, and that's the letter that was there. She was already telling me to stop crying, you know. All right, I think we need to stop here. So, Hare Krishna, thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Mekhala Devi ki jai.